AmeriQuest goes down.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Not very long ago, AmeriQuest was the country's biggest subprime lender. It was so successful, it paid millions of dollars to put its name on the Texas Rangers baseball park. But in the past year, AmeriQuest saw wave after wave of defaults. It had to lay off thousands of people. And now the company is no more. AmeriQuest has sold off the last of its assets to Citigroup. The U.S. subprime meltdown is rippling throughout all corners of the world. Standard & Poor's says among emerging markets, Latvia and Iceland are the most vulnerable to serious problems from this. Our correspondent Stephen Beer joins us now. Stephen, why Latvia and Iceland?
They are both very small economies. I mean, Iceland, there's only 300,000 people living there. Mm-hmm. And both have had a raging credit and housing boom in recent years. And therefore, they've both been living in a credit bubble. As that credit is withdrawn, both will suffer.
Well, what might happen to them?
In the case of Latvia, S&P feel that it's possible that it may have to devalue its currency, the lat. Iceland, which has had this decade-long boom fueled by foreign takeovers, could actually be tipped into recession. The Icelandic currency, the krona, has been involved in this huge wave of speculation with people borrowing in currencies like the Swiss franc and then pouring it into the Icelandic krona. If that whole trade goes into reverse, the Icelandic authorities will have to push up their interest rates. And since Icelandic interest rates are 13.3% at the moment, clearly much higher interest rates could cause huge pain.
Now, what does S&P say about the other emerging markets in terms of which ones might withstand this better?
Well, S&P says that Russia, Egypt, Ukraine, and the Czech Republic probably are the emerging markets which have the least to fear. They are the least exposed to this speculative bubble. On the other hand, Bulgaria, Turkey, and Romania do look pretty vulnerable, too.
Wow, it's spreading fast. Stephen Beard in London, thanks for joining us.
Okay, Scott.
Investors should be well-rested after the three-day weekend. They'll need it. They got to get back to work this morning. The Dow stands at 13,357. It lost 21 points last week. The S&P 500 begins at 1473 after a 16-point loss. The NASDAQ is at 2596. It gained 31 points last week. Stocks gained about 0.5% in Asia. European shares are lower so far. What's the worst car of all time? The Pinto? The Fiero? The Yugo? It's a tough call, but the Edsel has to be up there. 50 years ago today, the Edsel was introduced to America. Ford isn't holding any anniversary celebrations for obvious reasons, but the Edsel has found a measure of redemption after all these years. Here's Dan Gretsch.
The Edsel was hyped as the car of the future, but drivers, mired in the Eisenhower recession, weren't impressed by its hefty price tag or its maintenance issues. Ford discontinued the car after just 3 years. But in a twist of fate, the Edsel nowadays commands a bit of a following.
My name is Phil Skinner. I am the collector car market editor for Kelley Blue Book, and I'm also the past president of the Edsel Owners Club.
He says rarer model Edsels can fetch six figures in an auction. Hundreds of Edsel enthusiasts gathered this July in Dearborn, Michigan to celebrate the anniversary. Ford Motor Company didn't join them.
Ford's going through a tough time right now, and there's probably a bit of a sting still. They relate the name Edsel to failure.
The Edsel was originally named after Henry Ford's son.
Us who own Edsels really know it's an acronym. Every day something else leaks.
I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Duke University's Fuqua School of Business Executive MBA programs, where working professionals earn Duke MBAs from locations around the world. Online at DukeExecutiveMBA.com. And by the American Public Transportation Association, supporting America's public transportation systems, working to help reduce greenhouse gases for a better environment at publictransportation.org. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org.
I've never been so grateful for air conditioning as I was this past weekend. Good grief, it was hot. The thing about air conditioning, though, is it's finicky, hot and cold zones, especially at work. We asked our intrepid reporter, Janet Babin, to look into this.
I'm in the studio where I record my voice for the show. It's quiet as can be in here, and it's freezing cold. Always is. But my colleague Keith Weston has the opposite problem. In the kitchen area the other day, I found him wiping his forehead with wet paper towels.
You know, it's just too darn hot.
And then he admits he's already tampered with the building's thermostat.
I asked around. I said, can we turn it down 1 degree, please? Just, I'm only asking 1 degree.
We can laugh now, but it can be hard to work if you're too hot or too cold. Engineer Jeremy Morrison says optimal climate comfort can depend on where you sit. Engineers typically mix outside and inside air to achieve a uniform temperature around 72 degrees. To do that, they set inside air at a cold temperature to chill the hot air coming in.
So if you're sitting underneath a supply air vent that's blowing 55 degree air, you're going to be cold.
Morrison also blames fluctuating indoor temperature on poorly installed air ducts. But design consultant Keith Aldridge with Advanced Energy says the reason we can't get the temperature right is dated design. He says AC systems overcool the air, but don't dehumidify, and too much water in the air is what makes us most uncomfortable. So we're wasting millions of dollars trying to control humidity with air conditioning.
10 years from now, we'll see buildings starting with, let's put a system in that provides fresh air, and then let's put a system in that dehumidifies the air, and then let's add cooling and heating if we need it.
For now, even workers at Aldridge's office have to resort to 19th century techniques to deal with 20th century climate control. Here's his colleague, Vicky McCann.
We tape an ice bag up against this thermostat with masking tape to trick it into thinking that my office is very, very cold, so the heat will turn on and the AC will turn off.
Until design improves, you might want to keep the ice bag handy. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Stay cool.
American Public Media.